Good morning. I call the Senate Finance Committee meeting to order. Today is Friday, March 8th, 2019. The time is 9:02 a.m. We are meeting in the Senate Finance Room in the State Capitol. Please silence your cell phones. This is Co-Chair Senator Natasha von Imhoff. I am joined today by Co-Chair Stedman, Senator Bishop, Senator Hoffman, Senator Wilson, Senator Olson, Senator Machicki, and Senator Wilikowski, and we also have President Giesel joining us as well. We do have a quorum to do business. On today's agenda, we have five bills. We will be looking at Senate Bill 25, Extend the Board of Dental Examiners, Senate Bill 29, Extend Board of Marine Pilots, Senate Bill 41, Number of Superior Court Judges, Senate Bill 4, Naming Scott Johnson Memorial Bridge, and Senate Bill 16, Alcohol License, Fairs, Theaters, and Concert Bonds. We're going to try to move the first two bills today, and we're going to hear public testimony on the other three. So, to start off with, I would like to direct members' attention to Senate Bill 25, Extend Board of Dental Examiners. On March 1st, we heard the bill, reviewed the audit, took public testimony, and reviewed the fiscal note. My office received no amendments and heard no concerns. So, Senator Wilson, this is your bill. Do you have any additional comments?
No, Madam Co-Chair, nothing but smiles.
Is there any further committee discussion? Senator Bishop, can I have a motion to move the bill, please?
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 25 from the committee with the accompanying fiscal note and a committee recommendation.
Okay, we're going to take a brief at ease to sign the reports. I apologize, Senate Finance. There was a move by Senator Bishop to move the bill. Is there any objection by committee members? Seeing no objection, we will take an at ease to sign the report. So next, I'd like to direct the members' attention to SB 29, Extend the Board of Marine Pilots. On March 1st, we heard the bill, reviewed the audit, took public testimony, and reviewed the fiscal note. My office received no amendments and heard no concerns. Co-Chair Stedman, do you have any additional comments?
No, Madam Chairman.
Is there any further committee discussion? Mr. Co-Chair Stedman. Can I have a motion to move the bill, please?
I'd like to have the Senate Finance Committee move Senate Bill 29 from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Any objection to the motion? Okay, we will go ahead and sign the reports for this bill, and I'd like to direct the committee's attention to Senate Bill number 41, an act relating to the number of Superior Court judges in the 3rd Judicial District and providing for an effective date. And I'd like to invite at this time Nancy Mead to the table, General Counsel, Alaska Court System, to present the bill. So, Ms. Mead, please identify yourself for the record and begin when you are ready.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Nancy Mead, General Counsel for the Alaska Court System. I want to thank you for your hearing Senate Bill 41 today. Very briefly, what this bill accomplishes, all it accomplishes, is increasing the allotted number of Superior Court judges by 2 and specifying that the 2 additional seats will be in the 3rd Judicial District. The seats we'd convert are in Homer and in Valdez. So to be more precise with this bill, the court system would be able to take 2 already existing district court judgeships, one in Homer and one in Valdez, and instead fill those seats with 2 Superior Court judges. You know the Supreme Court doesn't often propose legislation, but you might recall that we did have a similar bill last year, amending this very same statute for a Juneau judgeship. And that bill passed, and we did go ahead and implement it in Juneau with very positive results. To explain why the Supreme Court is requesting this statutory change, let me give you a little bit of background about the Homer and Valdez judge situations. Those are the only 2 court locations in the state that are served with only a district court judge currently. So our last remaining single judge locations where the judge is not a Superior Court judge. And this bill would change that. I talked about this before, but a Superior Court judge is a judge of general jurisdiction. They can cover any trial court issue. So they handle felonies, domestic relations like child custody and divorce issues, probate, like mental commitments and guardianships, child in need of aid proceedings, and juvenile delinquency. But a district court judge is a judge of limited jurisdiction. They can only handle misdemeanors and not felonies. They cannot handle child in need of aid cases or child custody cases or mental commitments. They handle domestic violence and a lot of misdemeanors. So it's really because a Superior Court judge in these locations can handle everything filed there that the Supreme Court wants this statutory change. And right now, the timing is ideal for converting both of these judgeships. The district court judge seat in Valdez is currently empty. The judge there actually was appointed as a Superior Court judge in Juneau recently. And the district court judge in Homer has recently announced her retirement. So that seat, too, will be empty, effective at the end of June. And if this passes, both of those seats could be upgraded to a Superior Court position. And we could advertise those as a Superior Court judge instead of a district court judge. But why does the Supreme Court want to change the status quo? And the reason is that the district court judgeships in those positions have really been problematic for a number of years. In Homer, the district court judge there has been unable to handle all the Superior Court filings. So anytime there's a felony case in Homer or a divorce case or a child in need of aid, a judge from Kenai travels down to Homer to cover it. And that happens a lot, and in fact, the default for the Kenai judges is to travel to Homer at least a week a month, and over the last 2 years, they've traveled 35 times down to Homer to cover those Superior Court filings. So that is not an ideal situation, and we would like to correct that, and that is bad and inefficient for the Kenai judges because they lose time in travel and it interrupts their calendaring and their ability to effectively cover the Kenai caseload. And as it happens, just because of natural retirements and otherwise, the 3 Kenai Superior Court judges right now are all fairly new. They've all been appointed in the last couple of years. So it doesn't really make sense to have those judges continue with what we've been doing down there. The Supreme Court has been aware of this, but again, this is the time to address it with that judge retiring. Valdez is in a similar situation, though not exactly the same. The district court judge there has been handling all the misdemeanors in a typical district court caseload, but also has proven to be very capable of handling cases that usually go to the Superior Court. So he had received some special appointments from the Supreme Court to cover a lot of Superior Court matters. And now with that individual gone, a new district court judge filed there would be unlikely to have either the experience or capacity or interest to handle all those matters. So again, it's just not an ideal situation. And we would like to have a judge there that can handle all the filings in those areas. The other thing I want to point out is not only is this just a good time because then we could advertise for a Superior Court judge, but just recharacterizing the judgeship is a thrifty way to find coverage there. We don't need to hire a whole new judge with new clerical staff and new equipment. A new Superior Court judge would literally sit in the same chair and use the same computer as the existing judge. So this is an opportunity to make the change in an economical and efficient manner by just recharacterizing those judgeships. And I just want to say also that the Supreme Court has considered all sorts of other options to provide better coverage here and has decided that this is really the best way to go. They've tried, and we do use video conferencing for Kenai judges to hold hearings down in Homer, and we have also installed video conferences between Valdez and Glen Allen and Cordova to facilitate having Superior Court judges use the that equipment to make things a little bit more effective. And we've tried to decrease travel costs that way, but sometimes judges simply have to be in the same room as the litigants in a case, so that doesn't just get rid of all the costs. And we talked about assigning a judge from Anchorage or Kodiak to cover some of these hearings, and we sometimes do that. But in the end, it's just an ineffective system or inefficient system, and this is the opportunity to try to address that. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Mead. We have a question. Is that Senator Wilikowski?
Thank you. How big is the caseload in Homer and Valdez? Is that and is it enough to handle a full-time super or for a full-time Superior Court judge?
The Superior Court caseload in Homer is about 300 cases, and that is less than, for example, Kenai and Anchorage, which might have about 500 or 600, depending on when. But with this substitution, that Superior Court judge in Homer would also be carrying all the district court cases, so they would do both. And that would be plenty to keep that person as occupied as other judges. And in Valdez, there are fewer, just a couple of hundred of Superior Court cases, but they have an awful lot of the district court cases, and they cover from really Whittier to Icy Bay and all the way up to Glen Allen and down to Cordova. So if that person does have excess capacity with this change, we hope to just be flexible and be able to use that Valdez Superior Court judge to address some of the heavy caseload in Palmer. And for example, if a Palmer judge has a long criminal trial scheduled, that Valdez Superior Court judge could help by doing some of the child in need of aid cases for that judge for a time period, for example. So this change just gives flexibility for better coverage, especially for those Superior Court matters like felonies and child in need of aid cases around the state.
Senator Wilikowski, follow-up?
Yeah, thank you. Peremptory strikes, what is sort of the general average on strikes, and how will you deal with the times when the judges are struck in Homer or Valdez?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, and just to back up, a party does have a right in every case to challenge the judge to not use that judge for their case once, and that happens. The plan is really the same as always. We have a lot of single judge locations, single Superior Court judge locations, and if a party preempts that judge, like bumps them off their case, we simply are able to find coverage elsewhere. And so if it's Valdez and that judge gets bumped from a certain case, a Palmer judge would cover it, or an Anchorage judge, depending on what's available. So when a bump of a judge happens in a single judge location, the presiding judge of that district kind of literally puts out an email who's able to come to this area and cover those cases. But it isn't terribly unusual. And as for the last part of your question, what is the rate? It varies greatly, but in our single judge locations, we've not in recent years had an overall problem with the judges getting preempted off cases. So we're able to handle that pretty well.
Thank you. Was it Senator Wilson?
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Ms. Mead, how often or in the future do you see this case happening again where we may have another district court? Are there other courts in the state of Alaska where the Alaska court system is looking at doing this type of move from moving district courts, I mean sort of adding the Superior Court judges to the district court seats?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, no. These are the last two that were locations where we were hoping to get Superior Court judges rather than the district court judges. And I'm not promising that we'll never do that again, but right now the Supreme Court, which is constantly looking at our caseloads and ordering reports from administrators and looking at other data, has determined that if these get upgraded, we shouldn't have a similar request in the near future.
Thank you.
I think Senator Lyman, Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is, we are well aware that we have a backlog in pretrial, people waiting trial, and will this change somewhat address that?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, we hope this helps with efficiency all over the 3rd Judicial District, and it will give us the flexibility, for example, when there is a large criminal case, to have a judge who's capable of handling that case and similar other things move and be able to help with that. Right now, with criminal cases, at the trial court level at least, we're trying not to be the cause of any sort of backlog. If parties are ready for a criminal case, the court is committed to providing a judge. We can do that by hiring what we call a pro tem or a temporary judge, and we've been doing that. And these two positions will give us even a greater ability to do that efficiently and quickly, so those judges could step in to help with felony cases throughout the district.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any further questions, Senator Wilikowski?
No. Just on Senator Wilson's sort of questions, has the court system given any thought to maybe moving more of the district court judges into Superior Court or eliminating the district court and just having them all be Superior Court judges so you have even more flexibility?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, again, the Supreme Court does look constantly at how courts are staffed and what the best way to do it is. If a court mostly has minor offenses filed in it, for example, it might not make sense to have a higher paid Superior Court judge than a district court judge there. So the district court judges do a lot of misdemeanor work and a lot of minor offense work that they're particularly well suited to do. In some ways, there's different skills that go along with handling a Superior Court calendar versus a district court calendar. So for right now, the Supreme Court has determined that we're pretty good with these two upgrades. That would settle it for at least a while. And of course, we're always trying to react to new filings and new trends. But I guess we've given consideration to it, but it would be massively more expensive to pay Superior Court judges rather than district court judges.
Any further questions by committee? Okay, so Ms. Mead, would you please review the fiscal note?
Certainly. The fiscal note is for both the positions, so each personal services line reflects the difference in the salary and benefits only for a Superior Court judge as compared to a district court judge. So a Superior Court judge's salary and benefits amounts to about $35,500 more than a district court judge's. So that's where the $71,000 in personal services comes. We netted out of that amount the average of the last 3 or 4 or 5 years of travel. that the Kenai judges and Palmer judges have experienced to cover these places, because we would no longer have that travel expense if the local judge were a Superior Court judge. That amounted to about $9,000 a year, leaving a fiscal impact of $62,000.
Are there any questions on the fiscal note? Okay, seeing none, we will open public testimony. So thank you, Ms. Mead, for presenting. Okay, so we're going to open up public testimony. Testimony will be limited to 2 minutes. Is there anybody signed up online? Okay. Is there anyone in the room who would like to testify? Seeing none, public testimony will close. Is there any further discussion on Senate Bill 41? So Senate Bill 41 will be held over for further review. Please let my office know by 5 p.m. on Monday, March 11th, if you have any concerns or amendments. So the next item on the agenda is Senate Bill number 4, an act naming Scott Johnson Memorial Bridge. I'd like to invite, if Senator Coghill is not here, then I would like to invite, please, Reneva Moss to the table, as well as Rodimus Mercado to present the bill. Please identify yourself for the record and begin when you are ready.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Reneva Moss, staff to Senator Coghill. He'll probably be sliding in here any minute now. But I wanted to introduce our intern, Rodimus Mercado. He's carrying this piece of legislation. But I did want to say that there are certain days in people's lives that stick with them. And May 1st, 2014 was one of those days. And Rodimus is going to explain the bill to honor Scott Johnson. Thank you.
For the record, my name is Rodimus Mercado. Through the chair, Senate Finance Committee, I would like to introduce Senate Bill number 4 to this committee today. An act naming the Scott Johnson Memorial Bridge. Sergeant Scott Johnson was a very honorable man, and it was a tragedy on that Thursday, May 1st, 2014. He was a great icon of honor, courage, and sacrifice to the state of Alaska, and I want this bill to be more of a memorialization of his time, 23 years, serving the state of Alaska. It will be renaming the Tok River Bridge, which is near the place where he used to grow up. He grew up in the community of Tok. I want the members and the chair to recognize that these signatures here, two pages full of signatures and soon to be heard public testimony in support of this bill. Brandy Johnson, Scott Johnson's widow, she wanted to know that if they were renaming this bridge, that it was the will of the people of Tok and not just to honor Scott Johnson just for her. She felt like this is something that she wants this to be taken seriously, and that the people of Tok know that this is what's happening. And clearly there is outspoken support for this bill, and I would like the chair to know and the committee that this is something that Tok would really like to see happen to honor their hero. Thank you.
Does the committee have any questions? Senator Schauer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to highlight that last point. We heard this in transportation, and the widow was, I think, caught a little off guard by this bill. She initially came on with her public testimony that she didn't really support it, but the issue was that it was going to be a reminder for her every time she drove over the bridge. So I think it's important that we remember to include family members. It was more of a reminder to make sure they're involved in the process. I think she was caught off guard. She did mention, and I just feel compelled because I don't know if she's going to speak or not. I wanted to have her voice here, that she's not against it. She just didn't want to be reminded of it. But if the community supports it, and clearly they do, she also made it crystal clear that she would support this bill going through. So those are the two things I wanted to mention, since I'm not sure if she's going to be here to testify, so that her voice was heard. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Schauer. Are there any other questions for the bill presenter? Okay. Thank you very much. We will now have invited testimony, We will actually start with Ms. Brandi Johnson. So I believe that she is on the phone. Is that correct? And Ms. Johnson, can you hear us? Okay, just a second. We're going to increase the volume on our end. Can you speak again?
Okay. Good morning, chairpersons and members of the committee. I am the surviving, my name is Brandi Johnson. I am the surviving spouse of Scott Johnson. I've found I must think about policy change beyond myself and what change it may bring to others. I realize there is not an inadequacy in policy to address here today. I like the fact that the Toke River Bridge is named what it is. The bridge has held that name for many years. Scott and I have floated the river from dawn till dusk hunting moose, from the Glen Highway to the Alcan Highway ending at the Toke River Bridge. In that same segment of the Toke River, Scott told me stories of camping with his family as a young boy. He and I crossed the bridge twice yearly, traveling to and from Eagle, Alaska during hunting season for at least 18 years. Prior to him being murdered. We must remember policies that are clearly understood and supported by all factions of the community are respected and formulated in a constructive way. I'd appreciate hearing supportive testimony or reading letters of support from the communities that centralize the area of the Toke River Bridge. Support from just family, friends, and coworkers limits the space for the community participation and tailors the policy to just a few individuals. Through the public deliberation across all factions, community members can voice their respect for change or no change. Not everybody likes change. Change shouldn't be based on tradition, personal, political gain of groups or individuals. Allowing and encouraging this involvement allows community representatives to become more active members in the policymaking process. After Scott was murdered, I was asked if I was interested in naming a bridge after Scott and Gabe Rich. I was not, based on the location of the bridge. I didn't want to drive past a sign that had Scott's name on it and see that it had been shot up with bullets and spray painted. The disrespect and hurt is terrible. Well, what is going through my child's mind when they see this kind of vandalism? As much as I appreciate the thoughtfulness of the honor, none of these honors take away the pain and loss. This is where I must look beyond myself for others. Scott's job was that of a public servant, and now I have found that his death, for many, will always be remembered by his job and not the person he was. As of 2 days ago, I did receive an email from Senator Coghill's office showing approximately 50 signatures in support of the bridge renaming. I'm glad the community is aware of the bill because I wasn't sure of that and that there is general support. In conclusion, I support the renaming of the Toke River Bridge to the Scott Johnson Memorial Bridge if there is continued community support of the centralized area of the bridge. How our lawmakers measure that support, I will leave to them. Thank you for this opportunity to speak before you today.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. Thank you very much for testifying. Are there any questions from the committee for Ms. Johnson? Thank you. The second invited testimony we have today is Mr. Dave Sandcliffe. Dave, are you on the phone?
Yes, I am, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Dave. We can hear you loud and clear, so please begin when you're ready.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is David Sandcliffe. I live here in Toke. I've been in the area since 82. I've lived in Toke proper since 92. And I was one of the people involved in circulating the petitions. There's now 4 pages of signatures, so approximately 100 people. And any of you who have ever circulated a petition, you know you get different responses. Well, let me just say for the record that this petition was one that people couldn't wait to sign. There was virtually no one opposed, and we approached a wide spectrum of people. With that, I'll give my testimony. A bridge over the Toke River is so appropriate to honor and remember Scott Johnson. Scott crossed this river many times in his life, floated it and boated it as well. The Toq River is synonymous with Scott's community he spent so many of his young years in. A bridge spans an otherwise difficult feature to cross or pass through. Scott's life is one of crossing many challenges, cultures, and settings. He was rural, but he learned how to thrive in an urban environment. He was Caucasian, but he learned to love and appreciate and respect the ways of his Athabascan neighbors and friends. He worked well with all kinds of people of all ages, but he also learned to work, train, and admire the importance of his canine companions in law enforcement. Scott knew the dangers of his career choice, but he spanned that danger with devotion and courage. Scott has been an inspiration to all young people who grow up in a tiny rural Alaskan community and wonder if the larger world has a place for them. Yes, a bridge bearing his name in his beloved Toq, is fitting and truly a positive act. Scott believed in bridges, and his life was a continuing example of how he built them. Many years from now, someone pausing on this bridge over the Toq River will wonder who Scott Johnson was or is. Perhaps they will ask someone in the community or Google the name and simply go, wow. Because of this dedication, Scott's incredible contributions to life will live on, and the community that so loved him will smile and nod each time they cross over the bridge. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Stancliffe. We really appreciate you testifying today. Are there any questions from the committee for Mr. Stancliffe? I'd like to state for the record that Senator Coghill has joined us. If you would wish to come to the table and speak on your bill, now is a good time.
Thank you, Madam President. Madam Chair. John Coghill, Senate Seat B. And I just came up the stairs, so I'm whiffing. This is meant to honor a man who really paid the ultimate price to protect us. So I don't want him to be forgotten. I know his wife struggles with even the remembrance of it. But many of us in Alaska truly, truly, both with sorrow and gratitude, want to honor this man. And so this came to me by way of some of the state troopers, that they felt that this could honor him. And I think the community is very supportive. I want to thank my staff for standing in my place. I would only ask you to help me do a continuous remembrance of honoring a truly great Alaskan. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Coghill. We have several people signed up online to testify, so I would like to open up public testimony at this time. Testimony, please, will be limited to approximately 2 minutes. I do see Mr. Bud Johnson, father of Mr. Scott Johnson, signed up. So Mr. Johnson, please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Finance Committee, for hearing me. My name is Bud Johnson. I've lived in Toq most of my life. I raised my family here, one of which was Scott Johnson. With the community support, and my family would be very supportive of putting Scott's name on the Toq River Bridge. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Are there any questions? Thank you. The next person we have signed up to testify is Elizabeth Zabelski from TOC.
Thank you, Finance Committee, for hearing my testimony. I've been a member of the TOC community since 1974 and was fortunate to watch Scott and his brothers grow up and watch him particularly become a leader, not only at the school, but later on in the community and the state. He was always a role model for the youth of our community, and I think that naming the bridge, having his name on the bridge, would be a good thing in that that would be a reminder. It'll always be the Toak River Bridge, but having Scott's name there would just be special to all of us. Thank you. Oh, sorry. Elizabeth Zabelski for the record.
Thank you, Elizabeth. The next person signed up to testify is Mr. Richard Schultz, who I believe is a former legislator.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chairman. This is Dick Schultz. I see, looking on the screen here, I see quite a few of the members that when I served years ago. I don't know when these people decide, what, like Click and Lyman and, yeah, Mr. Olson, when they have had enough of Juno. But anyway, very honored to have the opportunity to testify on this. It's every once in a while something comes along where you have the opportunity. You don't think about it, but every once in a while something happens where you have an opportunity to memorialize someone. And if there's one person that we could go back in Toak and do, Scott Johnson is that person. He was an inspiration to a lot of people in this area, a lot of young people, and continues to be that. His name on that bridge will allow people in generations to come to look at that and find out more about him. That's it. Thank you. I just one other thing. I saw John Coghill there. I was outside when his father passed away, and I want to express my condolences to him and his family. And his father, Jack Coghill, will live in, is etched in the annals of Alaska history as one of our founding fathers. So. With that, the Scott Johnson Bridge is something very wonderful that can happen in the Toak area. Thank you.
We have actually questions for you, Mr. Schultz. We have Senator Hoffman has a question.
Thank you, Richard. I never heard anyone call you that as my seatmate in the House. Everyone referred to you as Dick Schultz, but I would like the committee to realize that one of the best signs for campaigning was that Dick Schultz had. He had a picture of him standing in his field as a farmer, and it said, Dick Schultz, outstanding in his field. Thanks for all your public service, Richard. It's always good to hear your voice.
Any further questions? Senator Bishop.
Hey, Senator Schultz, hey, thanks for coming in today to testify on this memorial bridge. I appreciate it, and we'll take good care of the Toak cutoff.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Schultz. The next person we have to sign up to testify is Mr. Brian Wassman. Mr. Wassman, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Good morning. My name is Brian Wassman, and I really appreciate this opportunity to testify. I've been an Alaska State Trooper 25 years. Although I'm not representing right now, it does give me some perspective. I'm in favor of Senate Bill number 4. I strongly encourage the passing of this bill. There's a tremendous amount of pride that comes from wearing the uniform of the Alaska State Troopers, and only a small percentage of applicants actually earn the right to serve. Many of us derive a strong sense of pride from just serving our communities and a sense of service. Scott was no different, and I know this because I knew Scott for 20 years. We both went to the same academy in 1993. He was very proud to serve with the Alaska State Troopers, and he was also a very proud family man to his wife, Brandy, three daughters, and just I knew also that he was from the small town of Tok. And to a large degree, I'm very aware of how small communities feel about, you know, their own when they go on to go serve in some proud profession like the Alaska State Troopers. I'm from the small town of Nome and had a similar growing up as Scott, and I've been around many rural communities where people have approached me and asked me, hey, do you know Trooper so-and-so from you know, my community? And there's a greater degree of community and sense of family from smaller towns, and I certainly saw that many times in my travels. Many people knew Scott not just for being a state trooper. As a matter of fact, he was very well known for his athletic accomplishments and being a hunter out there in that community and just being a good friend and a very good citizen out in the community of Tok. I feel like if you pass this Senate bill and name the bridge in honor of Scott Johnson, it'll offer a degree of gratitude and thank you for his service and his sacrifice to people who pass over that bridge. I know driving on roads, no matter where it is, when I pass a something like that, I always pause and have a sense of reflection and thanks. And I think if you guys do the same thing for Scott, that'll offer that same sense of pride and sacrifice that every time somebody from the community of Tok drives over that and over that bridge, they'll remember Scott and they'll pause and reflect and remember him, and we'll never forget his memory. Strongly encourage you to pass this bill. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Mr. Wassman. Is there any questions by the committee? Okay. Is there anybody signed up? Any more signed up for public testimony? Anybody in the room who would like to testify? Seeing none, public testimony is closed. I'd like to invite Mr. Mike Lessman, unless there's any other further questions for the bill sponsors by the committee. Okay. So thank you for being here, and I'd like to invite Mr. Mike Lessman to, he's with the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, and he will be reviewing the fiscal note for us. And if there's any questions with the committee in regards to Department of Transportation and the bridge in particular.
Good morning, Madam Chair, committee members. For the legislative record, my name is Mike Lessman. I'm the legislative liaison for the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. Madam Chair, I'm happy to inform that the department has a construction project ongoing to replace the Tok River Bridge. The project will replace the existing bridge, reconstruct the bridge's approaches, install new guardrail, and also replace signage. This is a federally funded project for which the legislature has already appropriated state match, a little south of $900,000, Madam Chair, in prior year capital budgets. So, therefore, the department has a zero fiscal note.
Thank you, Mr. Lessman. Any questions by committee members? Okay, so Senate Bill 4 will be held over for further review. Please let my office know as soon as possible if you have any concerns. Thank you. Okay. So I am watching the time, and we have about 45 minutes. This is our final bill. And before I get to it, I think we're going to go through the bill presentation, the sectional, and testimony. And depending on whether we have time, we may move discussion until Monday. So at this, the last item on the agenda is Senate Bill 16, an act relating to certain alcoholic beverages, licenses, and permits relating to the bond requirement for certain alcoholic beverage license holders and providing for an effective date. I'd like to invite Senator Machicki and his staff, Edra Morledge, to present the bill. So when you're ready, please identify yourself for the record and begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. I'm Senator Peter Machicki, District O on the Kenai.
And Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Edra Morledge, staff to Senator Michicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My priority in this bill is the state fair license. Many of us are fair goers, and just so you understand the importance of it, the alcohol sales at the state fair helps fund, it keeps ticket prices down, and it helps fund programs for youth, such as 4-H and the livestock programs as well. They've operated for the last 38 years, but since the legislative audit has found that they've been operating outside, the ABC board has been operating outside of their requirements, they have made it clear that any renewals associated with these license types will not be renewed further than perhaps this time, but several have been denied. So as of February 4th, there are 11 businesses that had been or are still operating under a recreational license. They're being denied one by one as the renewals come up for being out of compliance with the statute. Since February 20th, four have been denied. You know, Madam Chair, alcohol business licenses are assets. They're sort of attached to the business. Whether you're going to sell them or not, they're very important in the operation of those businesses. And when those entities are denied alcohol licenses, people start bringing in their own. You know, we heard testimony from the Kenai Peninsula Fair that when they did not allow alcohol sales, it became unmanageable when people would just sort of smuggle in their own alcohol. So this becomes a licensed premise, and it's more easily regulated because you know it's going out, you can control consumption, you can make sure that it is being dispersed responsibly. All of the folks in this bill are responsible operators. These are people that have not had issues with the operation of their operations, their licenses. And ironically, had the Title IV review passed in the 6 years we've been working on it, many of these issues would have been taken care of. This bill is specifically for those license types that are at risk of being denied and no longer operating. And again, my priority was the state fair, but there was an opportunity to help a couple of other issues and businesses. All of them are licenses that were operating as licensees or through regulation. We're not creating new businesses under this code. So I want that clear for the public and for this committee. So some of them, of course, is the Performing Arts Theater, which was in regulation, a concert permit, and clarifying that ski areas can continue operating business as usual. I recognize there are others out there that fall outside of what we're doing here in this bill. We invite them to contact your office if that's something they want to talk about. And then finally in this bill, we have the bonding issue, which essentially is an incentive for people to pay their taxes on time. If they are good operators that continue to pay their taxes on time, we want to create an incentive so that they don't have to invest in a bond. And it's only available over time if they continue to operate responsibly and pay their taxes in a timely manner. That's all I have, Madam Chair, and my staff, Edra, can go over the sectional if you so desire.
Are there any questions from the committee members now for the bill sponsor? Okay, Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you. Bowling alleys is a concern that I've heard recently. Is that something that you've looked into?
So I'm thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Wilikowski, I actually heard of the bowling alley issue here locally, and it's the prime example of them no longer being able to serve and perhaps folks walking over to another store off premise for a beer or two. So it is another example. It's not currently in the bill, but easily can be if this committee decides to move in that direction.
Senator Schauer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Same kind of venue just to see where this goes, but Talkeetna, Willow, Houston, Glen Allen, Delta Junction, Valdez, they all have their events every year. Do you foresee this affecting them as well, these small towns that I have throughout my district that have a lot of their own fairs and events throughout the year? And is that something I should be looking at?
Thank you, Senator. Through the chair, this would allow that to occur at those fairs as well. It's a fair license. It's not an Alaska State Fair license. So it does make that available for those events as well.
Thank you for that clarification. Senator Wilson?
I have two questions. One's a follow-up to Senator Schauer's question on it can only be issued for one per borough. So the Mat-Su is wide as West Virginia. If we can only have one fair license, is it the first one who applies for that fair license? Is it the oldest running fair? I mean, I just don't see how that applies.
That is the case, and perhaps Edra can explain that. That's certainly something you can adjust, Senator Wilson, through the chair. My concern is the bill not becoming a Christmas tree for potentially new uses that were not traditional, but that's something that you can certainly consider that we would accept if it was applied responsibly.
This is a
Ms. Edra, do you have a response to that?
excuse me. Yes, I do, Madam Chair. For the record, Edra Moreledge again. Through the chair, Senator Wilson, you're correct that the bill provides for one state fair or fair license per borough, with the under the definition that's applied in the bill. However, as you mentioned, there are a lot, as was also mentioned by other committee members, there are other fairs occurring around the state that don't necessarily meet the definition in this particular bill. They're operating sort of under different business models, whereas they get caterers permits or they have special event permits. This is not going to affect any of those operations. This is simply to allow the larger regional fairs to operate without the threat of their license not being renewed.
Follow-up question, Senator Wilson?
Yes, Madam Chair. We've had a myriad of issues with the Alcohol and Marijuana Control Board, and in this case, the alcohol portion of the audit recommendations going through, looking through sort of the broad interpretations or reinterpretations of the laws, and we've, the Alaska State Fair, and I do have a question at the end of this. The Alaska State Fair has, been in operation for about 30 years, and so this is, I think, the 18th renewal or so came up, and, oh, wow, you're not going to be permitted. And so I'm just afraid that these other vendors that have been operating in good faith and good standing with no issues with the local law enforcement, they get their things signed off and checked off, that we're still going to miss something. And I just worry about some of the efficacy issues that this may not cover with just going through the AMCO the process. I mean, I just don't see any other way than to otherwise go around the AMCO process with my grave concerns. And have you heard of other communities that have similar issues upon their licenses of their, the forest, the Girdwood Forest Fair, the Bear Paw Festival? I mean, we have a plethora of fairs and things. I just don't see us doing legislation every single time when this should be a board problem to correct in terms of looking at a different way than just passing this legislation and then we're going to come back next week and look at another piece of legislation. That's not our role. I think it's more of it belongs with the Alcohol Marijuana Control Board, and I just don't see that executive director doing that role appropriately or the board members doing that role appropriately with the efficacy concerns that have come up before us already.
So before you respond, Senator Michiki, I do want to state that we do have Erica McConnell, who's the director of Alcohol and Marijuana Control Office, I believe is online.
Madam Chair, if I can answer that question. Senator Wilson, through the chair, our alcohol statutes are a mess. It is a hodgepodge of changes over 40 years for our second largest taxpayer in the state, which is, I know we talk about a diversified economy, but behind oil and gas, essentially, is alcohol. Senate Bill 52 corrects all of those. I hate to talk about another bill, but the Title IV rewrite takes a comprehensive view of all of them. These are what's facing us right now. And we talked about the other fairs, and we probably should explain the catering license. They are operating under that license. So they bring in another licensee under a catering permit and deal with the distribution of alcohol that way. The folks that are in this bill are the ones that actually have a license to dispense. So it's a little bit different. But you're right, we have many issues. I have to give credit to the ABC board. It's not AMCO in this case. They have been audited. They are responding to the audit, and they are doing their best to stay within the law. We're changing the law so that they can stay within the law in these cases, but the larger rewrite has to occur in order for all of those other issues to be taken care of, which reflects how the industry is operating today in every case.
So what I'd like to do real quickly, though, is just to allow Ms. Moorledge to go through the sectional, and then the committee, yes, absolutely can continue with the discussion, knowing that we have ABC board, Mr. Bob Klein online, as well as Erica McConnell. So if we could just go through the sectional right now. Bill, Senator Wilkowski, I do see you, and it will just be a moment. So thank you, Ms. Moorledge.
For the record, again, Edra Moorledge, staff to Senator Michicki. On page one of the bill, beginning on line five, this amends Alaska Statute 0411080 concerning the types of licenses and permits to add performing arts theater license, a fair license, and a concert permit. Section two, beginning on line 19 of page 2. This adds a new section concerning the performing arts theater license. It defines the type of license, the biennial fee for the license, and the circumstances for issuance and compliance. Section 3 on the next page, lines 19 through 22. This amends Alaska Statute 0411210A. To use the word activities rather than events as being allowed under a recreational site license. Section 5, beginning on page 3, line 28. This adds a new section concerning the fair. Oh, I'm sorry, I think I skipped section 4, which was same page, lines 23 through 27. This lists sporting activities such as skiing and snowboarding activities as being allowed under a recreational site license. And then going on to section 5, same page beginning on line 28. This adds a new section concerning the fair license, and it defines the type of license, the biennial fee for the license, and the circumstances for issuance and compliance. Section 6 on page 4, lines 9 through 17, this adds the new section concerning concert permits, and this allows the holder of a recreational site license to obtain a concert permit. It disallows the transfer or renewal and sets the fee at $50. Section 7, page 4, lines 18 through 22. This section concerns the performing arts theater license renewal, and it adds the requirement that the license must have been utilized at least once during each of the previous two calendar years. Section 8, page 4, beginning on line 23. This specifies that the board may prohibit a new license or relocation of a fair license in accordance with population limits. Section 9 is also pertaining to that, and it establishes that a fair license, only one per borough, may be issued. Section 10, which is on page 5, beginning on line 27, adds the new license and the licenses and the permit to the list of those that are required to post notice. Sections 11 through 13, this concerns administration and enforcement of tax, and this is the bonding issue that if folks are paying their taxes and filing them on time, they would not have to get the $25,000 surety bond. and Section 14 is the effective date clause.
Thank you, Ms. Morledge. I appreciate that. So for the committee, we have three people signed up for invited testimony, and we have a few others that are signed up, not many, that are signed up for testimony as well. We have 30 minutes. I also want to give the committee time to engage with the invited testifiers. I think that's important. So unless there's any pressing questions at this very moment, I'd like to move into the invited testifiers. There's just three, and we can pause after each for questions. And so we're going to continue with that. Is that all right? Okay, hearing no objection. The first person for invited testimony is Jerome Hartel, General Manager of the Alaska State Fair. Mr. Hartel, can you hear us?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jerome Hartel, the General Manager for the Alaska State Fair. Thank you for this opportunity to testify today in support of Senate Bill 16, a bill that creates a license category for the Alaska State Fair that is not subject to misinterpretation or inconsistencies in the enforcement. A bill that better defines the business model of the Alaska State Fair. For an organization that has been serving Alaskans for over 80 years through things such as education and youth development, cultural diversity. We are the state championship for all 4-H activities. We organize the largest school field trip in the state. We spend over $300,000 in just educational programming each year alone. By serving as a resource also for nonprofit fundraisers, Rotary Clubs, Lions, Farmland Trust, 4-H auction, which last year netted $223,000 alone for the 4-H kids. By boosting the economy each year by over $23 million through the sale of merchandise and products, we create over 2,000 jobs each year. And also through the payment of taxes, over $100,000 from beverage sales alone in taxes. And, of course, through entertainment. We're the largest social event in the state where 300,000 Alaskans come together each year and celebrate and reunite with old friends and make new ones. But all these services and programs come at a cost, costs that are paid by a diversified revenue stream, one of those being, of course, the sale of beer and wine. Beer and wine sales are a large part of our diversified revenue stream that reduces our risk during a bad weather year for the fair. A revenue stream that allows us to be a self-sustaining fair also, one of only a few state fairs in the nation that isn't subsidized by state government. And we're very proud of that. The definition and qualifications of this license category that the fair currently operates under has been called into question by the ABC board, who has adopted a stricter approach to the renewal of recreational site licenses. This approach, of course, does jeopardize the renewal of the fair's alcohol license. Senate Bill 16 is an answer to that question of what license category does the fair fit in. And it clearly defines the business model of the fair and provides that clarity. I urge your approval of Senate Bill 16, and thank you for the opportunity to testify today, and I am available for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hartel. Is there any questions for Mr. Hartel? Okay, seeing none, thank you. Our next invited testimony is Mr. Bob Klein with the ABC board. Mr. Klein, are you online?
I am, Senator, thank you. The
main reason I am here is to answer any questions that your committee folks have. But I want to point out that Senator Wilson kind of described very well what the ABC board has been going through for many, many years. Our Title IV, which governs alcohol in the state, was a beautiful job done by Senator Ray back in the early 80s. And basically, that has been the law. The responsibility of the ABC over these 30, 40 years then has been how to interpret and apply that law to an ever-changing environment. Look from big things like brewpub was unheard of back then to small things like there is no category for an operation like the fair. So we did, over the years, we did adopt and try to keep the public interest as primary. We did adopt Title IV to situations. When your audit, the legislative audit, pointed out to us that there was no base in law for an operation like the fair or bowling alleys, Senator Michicki was kind enough to step up and draft SB 16 to help us through this. It's been very frustrating because, yes, there are many, many operations over the years that would do well, but our hands are tied by this antiquated law. Not to speak to SB 52 until it comes before you, but SB 16 answers very effectively, answers some immediate problems, and I encourage you to vote it out of committee.
Thank you, Mr. Klein. Are there any questions for Mr. Klein? Okay, our next invited testifier is Mr. Dave Scanlon, the general manager of Eagle Crest Ski Area. I don't see him online. Am I seeing him? No. Is Mr. Scanlon here in the room? No. Okay. Well, that includes invited testimony. So, committee members, what we have here is about five invited or public testifiers. I can take a pause here if it's the committee's pleasure to ask questions to Ms. Erica McConnell. She is available for questions, or we can continue with the public testimony. Okay, we'll continue with the public testimony. All right. So we're going to open public testimony. The first person that I see here, we're opening it now. I see Ms. Cody Costello with the Alaska Center for the Performing Arts. Ms. Costello, please state your name for the record, and you have 2 minutes.
Great, thank you. My name is Cody Costello. I'm Vice President of Development and Communications at the Alaska Center for the Performing Arts in Anchorage. I'm here with my colleagues, Nancy Harbor, who's President and COO, and Cindy Hamilton, Vice President of Event Operations. We wanted to just speak quickly and first of all thank Senator Michicki and his staff and all of that have worked on this bill. We appreciate the clarity that it provides, and we look forward to being able to continue to bring the arts and experiences and opportunities to the community. We want to speak and share that we are in support of this bill and the additional revenue opportunity that it will provide to support our efforts here at the center. And we are available for any questions.
Does the committee have any questions? Thank you, Ms. Costello. The next person to sign up for testifying is in the Kenai LIO with Mr. Paul Shadira.
Good morning, Chairperson von Imhoff, Chairman Stedman, members of the Senate Finance Committee. My name is Paul A. Shadira II. Thank you for pronouncing my name correctly. And I am a resident of the Kenai Peninsula. I have already testified in front of the Labor and Commerce Committee on February 19th, but I'm here today to support the most current version of Senate Bill 16, also referred to as the Save the Alaska State Fair Act. I want to thank Senator Michicki and co-sponsors for working to improve clarity and for working with the Alcohol Beverage Control Board to strengthen compliance while providing opportunity. The State Fair is truly an Alaskan institution, considered a family event. It attracts and benefits all Alaskans in all social categories, enhances and entertains, and is a pleasure to all those who attend. The State Fair or other regional community fairs are limited events that allow many in the community of Alaska to come together to better appreciate who we are and have a little fun. In these trying times, we should not be hindering functions that are considered an Alaskan way of life. Considering the challenges your committee has to tackle, how many other bills will you encounter this session? The cost of the cost the people of the state nothing. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shadura, for your testimony. Next we have signed up is Marna Sanford with Fairbanks.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Marna Sanford, and I actually am testifying today as a supporter of the Chicken Stock Music Festival. And I think a lot of the comments that were brought before the testimony kind of speak to the reason why I'm actually opposed to this bill as currently written. I love that everybody kept saying that it provides clarity to the fair, but the problem is it doesn't provide clarity to the small festivals and events that are taking place throughout the state, and I think Senator Wilson mentioned that. So I've been involved with Chicken Stock for a little over a decade as a concert goer and volunteer, and it just so happens that I'm the token lawyer friend of the organizers, which sometimes is problematic. Several years ago, Chicken Stock had been operating on a caterer's permit, and because as mentioned already in this hearing, because of the way that regulations can often be interpreted differently by different people, they were no longer able to use their caterer's permit. I want to say it was in either 2015 or 2016. Anyway, since that time, they've been forced to torture the existing laws and regulations to be able to continue to serve beer and wine to concert goers. And this current legislation, while I think it is awesome that it's solving one issue, I think it has the capability of solving a few with some small tweaks to the language. There currently is no way for events like Chicken Stock to they don't qualify under the proposed performing arts theater language. They don't qualify currently under the proposed recreational site language. So anyway, I would love it if there would be, I've sent language to Senator Click Bishop and Senator Machicki with the, I've been working with the organizers of Chicken Stock, who I think are actually on the line waiting to testify, which we think would help solve the issue. Anyway, thanks for your time. Thanks for the work that you do. That's my testimony.
Thank you, Ms. Sanford. We appreciate that. The next person signed up to testify is Hosea Busby with Chicken, Alaska.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the Finance Committee. This is Josie Busby from Chicken, Alaska. Thank you for this opportunity to provide a testimony in support of the Senate Bill 16 with maybe a few amendments to make it clearer for the language to meet our festival needs. 13 years ago, I started and now currently organize Chicken Stock Music Festival, which is a family-friendly event, two-day event held at Chicken Gold Camp in Chicken, Alaska. Chicken Gold Camp has a restaurant license to serve beer and wine, and through 2015, Chicken Gold Camp was able to obtain a caterer's dinner permit to sell beer and wine at Chicken Stock. In 2016, we applied for the same permit, and ABC then, now AMCO, denied it. The director and staff changed, and they informed us that they interpret the laws differently than previous staff. Starting in 2016, Chicken Gold Camp was no longer able to obtain a permit to sell beer and wine, according to ABC. And since 2016, we have had to bring in a full beverage dispensary license holder from over 300 miles away to serve beer and wine. This is not a sustainable solution for us. We are excited about Senate Bill 16. I'm sorry, the law did not change.
the person in the chair changed, and therefore the interpretation of the law changed, which is what is affecting us today. We are excited about Senate Bill 16 and its specific accommodations for service of beer and wine at events like Chicken Stock and other statewide festivals, fairs, and concerts. But we are offering some amendments that are interpreted the same way all the time, because we need this law to work the same way for everyone, no matter who is in the regulating position. So in closing, we support Senate Bill 16, but it must include some amendments on the language. Thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony on this today.
Thank you, Ms. Busby. I believe that we have a question here from Senator Michicki.
Well, I do. All right, thank you, Madam Chair, Ms. Busby and Ms. Sanford, if you're still listening. I'm very interested. I mean, that's why we're sort of casting that out there. This is the one-off that we are hearing from that is not successfully using a caterer's permit, which I'm struggling with that. But I, perhaps you can contact our office and the co-chair to find a solution. That is our goal with this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Michicki. Our office is available to work with testifiers and your office to find appropriate language, and we will work with you. We actually have one more testifier that I see signed up online, Mr. Ken Peltier with Palmer. Mr. Peltier, are you online?
Oh, hello.
Peltier?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. Hello, everyone. This is Ken Peltier. I live in Palmer. And I'm an entertainer in the state of Alaska for the last 20 years. I was kind of made aware of this a little further down the line than when it started. And so when I heard that the state fair might not get their license, the very first question I asked was, well, was there a violation or did they do something wrong? And I was told clearly no. So there's a really smart senator sitting around your table there that taught me a lot of stuff. And said sometimes you got to stay tuned before you broadcast, and so I did that. So I got a little educated here on this. I think it's frankly just a little absurd that the fair is caught up in this. I think there's a long time need for some housekeeping, which you guys are doing, and I understand that. Not only that, I entertain, I served on many boards down there through several governors in my other career path, and so I get the hard work going on, but I also understand that a lot of things just go on because that's the way we've always done them. I just don't think that the state fair should be in jeopardy of losing their license because that housekeeping needs to be done. So I'm in full support of SB 16 if it needs to be, you know, added on to or amended as you go along to take care of these smaller other entities that have spoke up, then great, but I strongly support them getting their license and this bill, and I appreciate all of your hard work around that table and all the boards involved.
Thank you, Mr. Peltier. Any questions from the committee? Ms. Senator Bishop.
Mr. Peltier, thanks. I want to thank you for your volunteer work you do with your music, especially for those cancer survivors and those veterans out there. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. I've just been asked to go to Qatar and play for our troops in Saudi Arabia in September, so I'm going to do that after the state fair ends. So,
thank you.
I appreciate it.
Thank you. Is there anybody else signed up online? Is there anybody in the room who would wish to testify? Seeing none, public testimony is now closed. So we did hear the bells, but we have a few minutes. I'd like to allow this discussion to go for another 6 or 7 minutes, and I see Senator Wilson's hand up.
Yes, I have a question for the sponsor. A question first for Ms. McConnell. She's on the line.
Ms. McConnell, are you on the line? I see that you're here. Can you hear us?
Yes. Okay. Yes, Madam Chair. This is Erica McConnell. I can hear you.
Thank you. We have a question from Senator Wilson.
Ms. McConnell, in the 2014 audit stated that there was a number of licensees that had issues that may not have been covered quite correctly in the recreational licenses. Did the board at any time send out notices to these entities that their licenses may not be continued?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, I was not in this position in 2014, so I cannot say for sure, but I do not believe notices were sent out at that time.
So the only way a licensee knew that they would not be noticed is when they applied without notification, without any further notification, that their licenses, which were going to be denied, they were denied, and then that's how they found out. But is it true that then the Amoco board could have renewed their license even with sort of a, or just give them a temporary license until this problem could be worked out, or a solution that the board could have wrote a letter to the legislature asking for these situations? I just know that there's been at least a dozen or so licenses that have been sort of not renewed. I just trying to find a way to not hurt this industry due to a lack of oversight of the board.
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, so when the first audit reached this conclusion in 2014, I don't believe notices were sent out at that time. The board started to look more closely at these licenses during the renewal period for 2017-2018 licenses, so this would have been around the end of 2016. And at that time, the board did identify several recreational site licenses that they determined were not compliant with the statute. And what they did at that time is they told those licensees, we're going to renew you for one final time, so you have 2 years to perhaps figure out a different license type that may work for you, or adjust your business model to figure out a different way to operate. And at that time, so in late 2016, early 2017, a number of licensees were given notice that that was going to be their final renewal.
Senator Wilson, you have a follow-up?
Did that happen to the Alaska State Fair?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, I don't believe so.
Thank you.
Senator Mushicki.
Thank you, Ms. McConnell. I know you're in a tough spot. As I sent a note to the chairman that said we give the ABC board a hard time when they don't follow regulation and statute, and then we give them a hard time when they do. So this bill was designed as a kind of catch-all for the specific license types, but we thought we caught it all. Can you explain the chicken stock situation perhaps, and how we I'm not sure why they're not able to use a caterer's license, but do you have a solution in mind, or is we only have a few minutes. Is that better taken offline to find a solution?
Through the chair, Senator Mushicki, it might be better to go back and do a little more research. It sounds like the original situation happened in 2016, which was again before my time. But my understanding is perhaps they were using a restaurant caterer's dinner permit, which is authorized, it's in regulation, and it's authorized for a banquet or dinner event. And it seems likely that they were told that type of permit was no longer available to them because they weren't having a banquet or dinner event, and that they needed to go get a caterer's permit. They certainly could operate their festival under a caterer's permit. But I'd be happy to look into this more and give you more information in writing.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Senator Wilkowski, I just was curious, do you have any questions?
I do. Are we going to bring this up again next week?
We are. Yeah. Well, this is a big topic, and we're absolutely going to be bringing it next week.
I can probably hold till then.
You'll wait until then. Okay. I would like to say thank you to the Department of Revenue and the Department of Commerce for being here. Thank you, committee, for going through the process of invited testimony and public testimony. We're going to set this bill aside. Please work with this bill sponsor as well as my office if you have any amendments or if you want clarification on the actual bill. So we're going to set it aside, and we're actually going to pick it up early next week. So this concludes today's meeting. Our next meeting will be Monday, 9 a.m. We will hear Senate Bill 12, Assault, Sex Offenses, and Sentencing Credit. So we are adjourned at 10:26 a.m.